This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Maiken Scott. This story is from our episode, Full House. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. 1 in 5 Americans live in a multi-generational household. That means at least 2 separate adult generations share the space. Think grandparents, parents, kids, maybe aunts and uncles, all living under the same roof. And the number of these households has been going up in recent years. Our associate producer, Xavier Lopez, lived with his extended family as a kid.
We moved here to the United States from Ecuador. It was kind of a big change because we live in this big home back in Ecuador, in Manta. And when we got here, we lived in the basement of my aunt's house. I was 8. This was back in 2002.
His aunt's house was in Queens. Xavier, his parents, and his sister moved into a basement apartment with other family members. And how big was the space?
It was not that big. It was only 2 rooms. One of the rooms was for me and my immediate family, and the other room was for my aunt and her husband and my cousin. And then my grandmother would sleep in the living room. She had these little like dividers, curtain things that would kind of like separate her from the rest of the room. It was kind of like a small attempt at privacy in a very not so private place.
Okay, so that's 1, 2, 3, 5 adults and then 3 children.
That's correct.
So did you all get on each other's nerves? I mean, it sounds cramped.
Oh, yeah, like constantly. We would always get on each other's nerves. It's just kind of bound to happen. It's such a small place. But, you know, like we also had some really good times. I think like that's just what happens with family.
Xavier has a lot of happy memories of hanging out with his parents and his grandma.
And, you know, my grandmother would take care of us. She would cook dinner for us while everybody else was working. And we would take care of her, you know. It was kind of a symbiotic relationship. Watching Sábado Gigante and, like, the old Mexican movies on Univision and Telemundo.
El búho.
Big family parties and music. Always music.
My uncle, he's a saloon singer. He kind of just like on the weekends would make the rounds in this little Ecuadorian part of Queens, going to the nightclubs and then singing. And he would practice in our basement, which would be his in the boiler room in our basement, which would be his quote unquote studio. So you'd always hear these like what they're called cortavenas, which is basically like these old Hispanic love songs that Latino men love to listen to while they drink. It really built in the soundtrack to this time in my life that I kind of adore.
Xavier's immediate family got their own place when he was in high school.
We moved into our own 2-bedroom apartment just for the 4 of us, which is still not a lot of space, but it was enough. It was better than what we were living in.
Given his experience with sharing a small space with several family members, as the pandemic unfolded, Xavier quickly realized that staying at home would not be safer for a lot of people. Instead, it might expose them to bigger risks of infection.
Growing up like this can feel kind of odd. I didn't really think about it much in my adult life until I started working on this piece, and I put out a call on social media. I heard back from Anna Cordero. She's a friend of a friend from back in Queens. And we quickly bonded over being from Ecuador, having lived in a relative's basement, and feeling embarrassed about it.
I had to decide which friends I could trust in order to be like, hey, come over and let me show you the way that we live. And I would find myself apologizing for the living situation.
Anna told me about the first time she felt shame about living this way. She was in the 3rd grade.
And I had a science project to do on plants with my friend Jackie. I remember we were trying to decide whose house we should go over so that we can do this project. And she was talking about how, oh, I can put the plants here in my backyard and my mom can make us snacks. And when we're not doing the project, we can play on my trampoline. And I was like, girl, you have a trampoline? And I was just gonna tell her, like, hey, I have this window in the kitchen where we can keep the plants.
When Anna's family first got to the U.S., they lived with her great-aunt, Tia Olguita. After a few years, they moved out on their own, but their family splintered. Anna's father was very abusive towards her mother.
I remember at the worst, I believe, my dad was choking my mom outside in front of the neighbors, and the police came. And I think that was the last incident that we had before we went to the shelter.
They stayed in the shelter for a while, then bounced around, spending some time back with the Olguita. After that, a rundown two-bedroom with a bedbug infestation. Anna's mom tried to find a place that was within their price range, but it was just impossible in an ever-gentrifying New York. She applied to public housing, but didn't get an answer. 6 years ago, they finally found a one-bedroom apartment. First, it was just Anna, her brothers Luis and Diego, and their mom, who is also named Anna. Soon, the family grew. Diego's girlfriend, Adamari, also moved in. And soon after, they had two kids, Elijah and Journey. Three generations under the same roof, again.
My mother, Anna, myself, and my brother, Luis, get the living room, which is the bigger space. And we divide that living room into different sections so that we each get our space because the living room allows for that.
Anna says these spaces are mostly for sleeping. She and her brother each get their own bed, and their mom sleeps on a reclining couch.
And then you head over down the hall to the actual bedroom, and that's where Diego shares a space with his girlfriend Adamari and the two babies.
Seven people sharing around 700 square feet. While living in those cramped quarters made their situation stressful at times, there were a lot of good aspects too. Anna says it brought them closer together when the family wasn't arguing. And although her childhood was filled with trauma, when her brother Diego fell in love and had kids, it was a turning point for the family.
The abuse that we all faced together kind of tore us apart. And so my brother having children really gave us a reason to come together for a common cause, is that we all love these children.
With new life came hope for a happier future.
I think that's the brightest thing that's come out of all of this. Like, to have the opportunity to see my niece and my nephew frequently and to take care of them really feels like a privilege. I love being able to play a role in their lives, and I really don't see that happening the way it is happening if we weren't able to be in such close quarters with each other.
Then the pandemic hit. The virus quickly tore through New York.
So we're going to put out an executive order today. New York State on pause. Two basic rules. Only essential businesses will be functioning. Second rule, remain indoors to the greatest extent to protect physical and mental health.
In March, people were asked to shelter in place to flatten the curve and reduce the risk of infection. All of us heard the same PSAs from elected officials and celebrities alike.
Hello, this is Robert De Niro.
Hi, everybody, it's Danny DeVito.
We really have to all stay at home. It's the only way that we're going to stop the spread of this virus.
Not just to protect ourselves, but to protect others and all the older people you love.
And I'm asking you from the bottom of my heart, all over the state of New York, stay home.
But for families like Anna's and mine, staying home was not safer. Home was where the danger was.
When my mom got sick, we did not have the same opportunities to isolate the way we would have wanted.
In Anna's family, the illness started with her great aunt, the Olguita, the one that took them in when they first came to the United States, and again when they were homeless. Olguita started having symptoms of the virus in late February.
She had been telling my mom that she had been feeling sick, and she was just anticipating like a yearly flu that she gets, right?
Anna's mom was also taking care of Olguita.
So at this point, my mom doesn't have any actual days off. She's either working or taking care of my aunt.
Olguita went to the hospital twice and was diagnosed with pneumonia. She was sent home with antibiotics, but she didn't get any better. She ended up back at the hospital, and this time she was tested for COVID, but her condition was deteriorating rapidly.
The doctor said that she had 50% lung function at that point. and she got intubated. They had a talk about how that they would let us know how she would progress throughout the night. And then some point throughout the night, they called my mom to tell her that she had passed.
Then the family got more bad news.
And we got a call from the hospital saying that they had the test results. And they told us that it came out positive. And so we were just asking, like, why are you telling us this right now? And then that's when they realized that she had already passed in the hospital that they were calling from.
They confirmed what the family had feared all along, that Tia Olguita had been sick with COVID that whole time. Anna's mom had been around her aunt a lot. And that same day, she started having symptoms herself. She had a sore throat, headaches, was feeling really fatigued, and could not get up. Anna went to stay with her boyfriend, Eric.
Because at that point, I didn't feel safe in the apartment with so many people. And that was the last time I got to see my mom for a few months.
The thought of being in that small apartment without any space seemed scary. She feared that if she stayed, she was bound to get sick. And that's exactly what happened with the rest of her family. At first, it was just the mom who got really, really sick.
We got very scared at certain points, and we didn't feel safe enough to go to a hospital because it was just from our belief in what we were seeing on the news and what we had already experienced, that my mom would just be intubated and that she wouldn't come home again.
Anna's mom would have uncontrollable shivers no matter how hot they tried to make the room. There were times when the nausea was so bad that she just wouldn't eat for days. When one symptom eased, another one would pop up.
It was just a plethora of different symptoms that could hit you, and each one lasts several days until that symptom ends, and then another symptom begins, and you get better, and then you get worse. That's what we witnessed for my mom. My brother just needed to rest for a few days. And then the babies got sick.
The virus jumped from Anna's mom to her brother Luis, then to the babies. And once it got to the babies, everybody else who lived in that apartment got sick. Thankfully, no one as bad as Anna's mom. My family got sick too, for the same reasons. My parents and my sister are still living in that same two-bedroom apartment in Queens. But now, my maternal grandmother lives there as well. And this apartment is very small. When you walk in, you're immediately in the kitchen. There's a bathroom through a door on the right, and the other half of this area is occupied by my parents' bed on one side, and a TV and a couch on the other. Then, two doors lead to the bedrooms, my sister's and my grandmother's. The only rooms in the whole apartment with windows. In a place like that, keeping your distance or quarantining is impossible. Everybody is breathing in the same air in the same small space, walking past each other constantly. Data from New York shows that the spread of the virus in crowded living situations was very common.
We found that COVID positive test rates were higher in neighborhoods with more household crowding.
That's Ingrid Gould-Ellen. She's a professor at NYU's Wagner School of Public Service and the director of the Furman Center for Real Estate and Urban Policy. The Furman Center put together a neighborhood analysis that broke down some of the disparities in COVID-19 incidents across neighborhoods. New York City is densely populated everywhere, but there are different kinds of density.
Some of the highest density neighborhoods in New York, where people live in tall apartment buildings, had some of the lowest rates of positive test cases.
These are affluent areas like Manhattan, where high-rise buildings can house thousands of people in one building. In these places, people have their own separate spaces, their own kitchens and bathrooms, despite living on top of each other, so to speak. Ingrid says that the neighborhoods that were the hardest hit were neighborhoods where the share of the population is overwhelmingly Black and Latino. Another finding from her report was that low educational attainment also correlated with areas that saw high upticks of COVID infection.
in neighborhoods that had lower shares of adults with college degrees, we saw higher positive test rates. And we believe that's because, workers without college degrees are more likely to be essential workers, to be workers who can't do their jobs remotely and safely shelter in place.
Essential workers, people working service jobs, janitorial and medical staff, are not able to work from home, which means more contact with people, increasing their chances of infection.
When we say something like, everybody should stay home.
That's Holly Taylor. She's a bioethicist at the National Institutes of Health.
For the vast majority of people, that means, okay, I'm going to stay home. I'm going to figure out how I can telework. If not, how on earth am I going to get my job done? Am I going to lose my job? What does that really mean? Or, okay, I'm going to stay at home, but I live with a lot of different people, and they all have jobs that take them out of the home. And how am I going to actually stay at home and protect myself from risk, right? It's not as easy as, well, just stay at home.
Holly says that the stay-at-home orders and the PSAs didn't fully take into account people living in these multi-generational homes and the dangers that they may be exposed to.
I don't know what Governor Cuomo was thinking, but this is often a challenge that we encounter in public health ethics generally.
She says that coming up with just the right messaging can be very hard for public health experts. And when you're in the thick of it, in an actual emergency, it can be even harder.
One of the things that's often on that list is to make sure that your messages are accurate and actionable and et cetera. But then when you're actually in it and you know that, quote unquote, the most efficient way to reduce spread is for people to not be on the street, right? Not be outside, not be congregating. A message like stay at home is on one hand very simple and on the other hand just too simple.
My family tried to stay at home, but both of my parents have jobs that don't allow them to work from home. My dad is a handyman and my mom is a home health aide. My mom was actually furloughed for a period of time and had to apply for unemployment during the time she was sick. My dad worked through a sickness, even though he shouldn't have, but he just couldn't afford to take off from work. Everyone in my family, thankfully, recovered. Anna's family is doing a lot better now as well. They were all able to get better, although her mom is still not the same.
The situation with my mom is just her dealing with fatigue, but her fatigue is nowhere near as bad as it used to be. So everyone's doing a lot better now.
Since then, Anna and Eric decided to move out on their own and are currently living in a 3-bedroom apartment with two of Eric's cousins, one of whom they took in after she was faced with a situation that left her homeless, an experience that Anna could relate to. Although the past few months have been a roller coaster of emotions, Anna feels like she's finally made peace with everything that's happened.
I definitely do find myself thinking more about it, but I feel calm. I feel a sense of closure now. Like, in the fact that I can help Eric's cousin overcome this obstacle that's in her life, where she could very well be in what could be the lowest point in her life. This could be the lowest point in her life so far. And me being here, being able to help her, it brings me a lot of joy to be able to play that role in her life at the moment, because I really would have needed it. I really would have loved for someone to be able to do this for me.
For The Pulse, I'm Xavier Lopez.